listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. It is Election Day, and I went out and voted this morning. In fact, I've got my my little sticker. I voted Yo Voté, which I guess is I voted in Spanish. It says underneath, yep, I vote. Which has to be making the Republicans crazy. What, they're doing them in Spanish? Oh, my God. It's for the illegal aliens. Right, right. So I didn't see any illegal aliens. This, you know, the in order to believe in the Republican worldview, you have to be semi-delusional. So, you know, there's hordes of Ebola-infected terrorists trying to come across the southern border to kidnap our children or something. There's there's millions of, I mean, literally millions, right? 7 million now, according to Greg Palast's research, the stuff coming out of Chris Kobach, the Secretary of State in Kansas, put together a list of people who have voted twice, once in one state, once in another. 7 million people, 3.5 million criminals in America who are facing 10 years in prison. But instead of putting them in prison, Virginia has already knocked 48,000 of them off the voting rolls. Wasn't that sweet of them? As are many other states. They're just knocking people off the roll. You got 7 million people on the list. Mostly Hispanic, mostly black. Asians are overrepresented because the list looks for common names. And it doesn't compare middle names. So John James Bradley in North Dakota is the same identical person as John Richard Bradley in Virginia. So let's knock them both off the voting rolls. Only it would be more likely to happen if the last name was Washington or Jackson or Jefferson or Madison or something like that. Many of the names that African-American families found themselves with or took after the Civil War. This, you know, it's mind-boggling. So anyway, my experience, and I'd you know, in our second hour today, Brendan Fisher is going to drop by. He's the general counsel for the Center for Media and Democracy, PR Watch. And we're going to, they've been tracking big money. We're going to talk about that. In our third hour, Lee Fong has done a brilliant investigative report for The Nation on how Mitch McConnell isn't just bending the law. He's stretched it to the point where, you know, it's like, it's about to pop. But nobody's going to hold him accountable because the Federal Election Commission does not want to enforce the laws. Because look at what happened when the IRS simply enforced the law. Right? The law says that if you are not principally a charitable, actually the law says if you are not entirely a charitable organization, you do not get tax exempt status. Whether you're Tea Party or progressive, if you're going to be doing something other than charity, you can't have the subsidy of all the rest of us by getting tax exempt. And they were just, I mean, they were just looking at this, and it turned into a scandal. It's a scandal, I'm telling you. So can you imagine how hysterical the Republicans would be if the IRS said to some of these 501c3s, some of these dozens or maybe hundreds of organizations that the Koch brothers and others have set up as front groups to channel money into these races, if the IRS said, you know, you're really not a charity. You're doing electioneering. We're not going to give you tax-exempt status. Or if the Federal Election Commission, which also works under the president, it's also part of the executive branch of government, if the Federal Election Commission was to say, you know, Mitch, you're breaking the law, because he is, you know, mailing out this mailer that says, election violation notice in principally African-American neighborhoods after, you know, years of hysterical bloviating about voter fraud, we're going to put people in jail, I'm telling you, jail. So what was your experience voting today? What are you hearing from friends and neighbors? I had a very interesting experience this morning in Washington, D.C. First of all, I showed up and there was no line whatsoever. I walked right up, said, gave him my name, showed him my voter registration card. She wanted to confirm my address. She said, tell me your address. I said my address. And she said, would you sign on this little this little electronic signature thing, you know, like when you buy something on your credit card and you've got to sign for it, that, you know, some of these stores do this, you know. And it didn't show my signature as I was autographing the thing. So this is biometrics. I mean, this is, you want to prevent people from voting multiple times, or if you want to make sure that the person is who they say they are. You know, I signed it, and her computer compared my signature that I signed right there in front of her with my signature that was on record from when I registered to vote, which I thought was pretty impressive and pretty cool. And it's better than any ID. It's easy to forge ID. It's really hard to forge a signature, particularly when you can't see what you're doing when you're writing it. Then it's got to be entirely that kind of involuntary or unconscious, you know, robotic, oh, I always sign this way. So, number one. Number two, after I signed in, after I logged in, as it were, and said, here I am, they sent me over to the next table where they said, would you like paper or would you like to vote on the voting machines, paper or electronic? There were two voting machines, and there were about 20 little booths where you could walk with a piece of paper. And, you know, I said, I'll take paper. And what was amazing was the three people in front of me had all said, I'll take paper. Everybody was taking paper ballots. You wonder why? I don't wonder why. It's, you know, people want to know that their vote was counted. And so there was only one proposition on the ballot here in D.C. It was Prop 71, legalize marijuana. I'll leave you to wonder how I voted. And it was really interesting. I should have remembered this, I think, from the last election. And maybe my memory is just getting cranky on me here, but I voted for United States Senator and United States Congressman or member of the House of Representatives, representative. Now, I also voted for our delegate, right? That's Eleanor Holmes Norton. And I'll just tell you right up front, I voted for Eleanor Holmes Norton. I'm such a fan of her and her work. I think she's brilliant. She's one of the most thoughtful, sophisticated, insightful, reasonable. You know, she's gentle, but she's fierce. I mean, I am such a fan of Eleanor Holmes Norton. And I'm pleased to live in the district that she represents, except for the fact that she doesn't really represent us because the law says that, you know, hey, we live in the district of the goddess. We're supposed to be doing the goddess's work. There's no self-interest. So you can't be represented if you live in the district of the goddess, the District of Columbia. But back in 1980, the district started electing essentially shadow congressman and a shadow, or woman, as the case may be, and a shadow senator. And Shane and I were debating this morning if you were if one of us was to put our name on the ballot and become the senator from the District of Columbia. Of course, there's, you know, they're not even going to recognize you or acknowledge you over at the Senate office building. It's in name only. It's a way. It's a number of states have done this. In the past, I mean, I'm like late 19th century, the states will start holding elections. They demonstrate to the country, hey, we can have an election. We can have a senator. We can have a representative. Here are the people. And then the country goes, OK, you got your act together. You can be a state. And this is like the next logical step toward D.C. statehood. I mean, there's 800,000 people in this town. That's, you know, that's the population of Wyoming. It's the population is larger than the population of Vermont. It's close to the population, I think, of New Hampshire. New Hampshire's probably larger than that because they've got this giant bedroom community in southern New Hampshire that's, you know, the edge. It's now the northern suburbs of Boston. So there's probably a million, maybe 2 million people in New Hampshire. But in any case, there's plenty of people in D.C. for it to become a state. So that was my voting experience. We'll talk about yours and any, you know, the other issues of the day right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So far, so good. And it looks like Democratic trend. The turnout numbers around the country are pretty impressive. We'll see how this thing goes. 15 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Carrie, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Satellite Network in Pipe Creek, Texas. You are on the air, Carrie.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to just encourage everybody out there, if they're listening, because I'm in Texas, sorry to say. And I was hoping that everybody would please go out to vote, especially the Democrats and Independents.
Yeah.
Because we're in a horrible shape here. And I went to early vote Thursday, and there was quite a turnout in a little town here in Bandera, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And then later that day, I went shopping, and I was at the grocery store, and the checkers always talk to you. So this young guy, he was about 20, asked me how my day was. So I told him I went to vote. And I asked him, I said, do you vote? And he says, I've never voted in my life.
Whoa.
So
I bet you gave him an earful.
Huh?
I bet you gave him an earful.
Well, I told him, I said, you need to vote. I said, because if you're going to college and you're here in Texas, you might get somebody that might give you free education at the state universities.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I was a public health nurse here in Texas for 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and I'm retired. But I did want to remind people that they've been cutting our public health, state health department budget for years. And look what happened just last month, or all this Ebola stuff.
Yeah.
We don't have anybody to do the work. In 1995, they changed their thinking, and they thought that they didn't really need that many medical personnel in the health department in Texas.
Right.
And so they started cutting nurses and all of these medical people. In 2005, when Katrina hit,
mm-hmm.
and we had a lot of refugees here,
mm-hmm.
They decided, well, we have people who have medication problems and they need prescriptions and they have medical problems. So where are all the people in the health department that are going to help us? And at that point, they decided, where are the nurses?
Mm-hmm.
And so at that time, they realized, oh, my God, maybe we do need nurses in a health department, because they're the people that can actually work with these types of problems and get things like that done.
Right,
right. So I'm just encouraging people to go and vote. I'm thinking that this election is going to be really close.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's going to be really close because a half a billion or more dollars are being poured into it by big league major right-wingers. You know, it's one third of all PAC money in the United States came from 42 people.
Mm.
I mean, that, you just chew on that one for a minute. That's, it's like aristocracy, anybody? Oligarchy? 42 people. One third of all the super PAC money. It's astonishing. Carrie, good on you for spreading the word and for voting. Thank you for the call. Great to hear from you. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. It's 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Harmon here with you, 20 minutes past the hour. And Bob in Glendale, Arizona, listening to AM 1480. Hey, Bob, you showed up to vote and you weren't on the rolls?
Yeah, Tom, that's for real. I showed up at the SunUp Glendale precinct, and for the first time I saw computers on the desk, and the lady was very nice, trying to read my Arizona valid ID, driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
And she scanned it, and lo and behold, I'm not in there. And we discussed it, and they had like about five people around the computer,
mm-hmm.
totally stumped. And then they finally said, well, you got to do a provisional ballot. Now, I've been voting in the general elections for over 30 years without a miss.
Wow. So you've been purged.
In the House for 20 years, so nothing's changed.
Yeah.
Except that now, they used to have the written signatures, you know, on paper.
Right.
And that's always worked. That was like clockwork. I'm there, my wife and everything. She hasn't voted yet, by the way. After school, she's going to come, and she'll probably encounter the same thing. So, new thing, computers. So I'm wondering, I'm a registered Democrat.
Oh.
Anything to do with that, would it? You know?
Yeah.
It's very frustrating, you know. We vote on them.
Bob, without revealing your last name on the air, I'm just curious, is your last name a fairly common last name?
No.
No. Okay, so you probably were not a victim of this Chris Kobach thing out of Kansas where they've got 7 million people with common names that matched other states. So this was probably something that happened in Texas. You got booted off the voting rolls by the Texas Secretary of State, who is, what, isn't that Greg Abbott? No, he's the AG. Interesting.
I know Purcell does the voting information stuff. And
are you going to call the Secretary of State's office and ask what the heck's going on?
I've got it on my calendar. They said I have to wait 10 days. I got the provisional ballot number on there.
Right.
I'm going to call them and you know, find out what the heck, did you count my stuff or not? And if you don't, they have a provision to make a complaint.
Right.
I imagine where that's going to go. But I don't know if my ballot's going to get counted or not, because they run them. If you're on the rolls, they run it right away, and you just use an arrow with a felt pen, and they read it.
Right.
But mine sits in a box. There was one other in there, and another lady just came in, and she wasn't on it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, man.
Provisional ballots do not get counted. And, unless you show up, and in some states you actually have to show up in person and sign and swear and show ID and all, you know, the whole song and dance.
I tried to make it an outrage, my constitutional rights, and they all kind of just yawned at me. They were nice, you know.
They're just volunteers doing their jobs, you know.
They're just doing their job. And she was saying, I'm sorry, it's my fault, I couldn't handle it. And I said, no, it's not your fault. It's the people above you. Something is going on here. And I'm, but, you know.
Yeah, like, yeah, and then they start thinking you're being paranoid. But you're not being paranoid. You're not on the voting rolls, and you've been voting for 40 years, and you haven't moved. So that's a problem. You need to check it out. Bob, let us know how it works out, would you?
Pardon?
When you find out what happened to your registration and to your ballot, give us a shout and let us know how it works out.
I'll follow up with you.
Great.
Definitely.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Bob. Great to hear from you. Chris in Darlington, South Carolina. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Oh, heard an interview on NPR yesterday that kind of backs up what you've been saying about voter suppression.
What was that?
You may already know about this, but the guy, and I can't remember his name, but he's the Muslim correspondent on The Daily Show, and he's apparently just done a book of essays about various subjects, but they replayed an interview he did with the chairman of Election Commission in Buncombe County, North Carolina, which is where Asheville is.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy ended up getting fired the next day for spilling the beans and saying what you've been saying all along, except you would think, I've been called a bigot.
Right.
And things like that. And at one point, the guy that was interviewing him said, you realize this is, we can't hear you.
Yeah.
And he kept right on with his rant. But I mean, it was just amazing.
Wow.
But yes, I did vote early 2 weeks ago. And yes, I voted straight ticket Democrat.
Yeah. Well, good on you, Chris. Very interesting. I'll have to check that out. Thank you for the heads up. Skip in Miami, Florida. Hey, Skip.
Hey, Tom. Just got back from the polling booth.
Mm-hmm.
And wanted to check in from the 27th district. And lo and behold, which is a brand new district, from the 2010 census. And we didn't get to vote for a congressperson this year.
Wait a minute. How's that possible? Every single member of the House of Representatives is up for re-election or election if it's a brand new district.
Well, the way it works here in Florida is, it was explained to me, because as soon as I got here, I called the election board, and they said that the Florida legislature, if a candidate is unopposed, which Ileana Ross Lakeman is a longtime congresswoman, was unopposed in the primary, and the Democrats didn't put up anybody in the general election, she gets a pass. She gets right in. So nobody ran against her in the primary, and nobody ran against her in the general election. So the citizens of the 27th district, and it's a new district, and it's not even gerrymandered. It's a great district. It's a geometric shape.
Yeah. That's amazing. Here in D.C., there are two at-large council seats. And I was voting for Democrats. You know, I'm not totally embarrassed to say, but I haven't been paying that much attention, frankly, to the city council races. And I just figured, oh, I'll vote for the Democrats. And there was one Democrat in, you know, in the list that just directly represents us, and I voted for that person. And then in the at-large ones, there were two, there were, you know, you could vote for two people, and there was only one Democrat. There were like five Libertarians, three Independents, two Republicans, and one Democrat. And I'm thinking, this is crazy. You know, the Democratic Party should have recruited a second Democrat, because I would have voted for both of them. And I think everybody else in D.C. who's a Democrat would have, too. And I don't understand when a party does not put up candidates. It's amazing. Skip, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. And very, very interesting. I mean, this is down in Florida. The Democratic Party, even if it's... This was Howard Dean's, you know, his 50-state strategy. You fight every race. You show up for every on every ballot. You work in every state. There is no such thing as a red state or a blue state. The entire country is purple. It's just, you know, the extent to which. And if you show up, you can participate.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And the flip side of that, of course, is if you don't show up, you don't have any chance of participating. Which is another way to say, get out there and vote. Right now. Taking back the mainstream media, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you, and time for our Fox so-called news alert.
Fearful and unbalanced.
News has never been softer.
The most distrusted name in news.
To be honest, I've never seen such dysfunction.
So, who is responsible for these outrages?
This is Fox so-called news.
Right, and Tucker Carlson proposing... Well, I'll just let him say it in his own words. Here you go.
A lot of them also are these young people who gave up their entire summers to help older white guys get reelected, and they deserve a little credit.
We need, I think, an older white guy appreciation day. I think they've done a lot for this country. As
it's
one
coming.
Of them.
It's
I do
coming.
I do think that. Like penicillin. That's a contribution.
Think of the Hallmark cards.
I don't know. I want to do that. If draft me, I'll host it.
Okay.
Right. Older white guy appreciation. I think that's every day. But, you know, what do I know? Right. All righty. Mike in, what, are you in Chicago, Mike? I don't have a city here, but it says you're listening to WCPT.
Yes, I am. I'm outside of Chicago. I'm outside of Will County at the very edge of the collar counties in Chicago.
Okay.
So I am in a swing county on a swing district right up against the edge of the thing. We usually are a barometer for what's going on and what's going to be happening. And we have a very high voter turnout, and we know how high voter turnout bodes well for Democrats. When we vote, we win.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, my district is actually probably at about 30% turnout, which is very high for my district right now.
Whoa. Now,
yeah,
I understand that you showed up and became a precinct committee man. Do I have that right?
I am a precinct committee man. There was no one representing our area. My wife is actually an election judge in my precinct right now. As
wow.
a result of, we moved into an area that was primarily, you know, red.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little blue snowflake in a red puddle.
Well, that's great. That's great. Good on you, Mike. And
we do swing in our name in our area. Our community, our precinct has a tendency to swing back and forth, and it is a good barometer of what's going on.
Yeah. So the net here is that it looks like you're getting. At least in your district near Chicago, that you're having higher than average turnout, and which of course bodes well for Democrats. We'll see how this goes. There you go.
Fingers crossed.
There you go. Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. Kurt in Beverly Hills, California. Hey, Kurt, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
Good to hear you voted. I sent my absentee ballot in last week and trying to get as many other people to go as well or to vote. One to call, do you know who Penny Pritzker is?
I do.
Yes, she is the Secretary of Commerce, not the Chamber of Commerce, but the Department of Commerce.
Right.
She's
also from the Chicago area, and she's also a very wealthy philanthropist. I think she's the heir, one of the heirs to the, what is it, the Hyatt or Hilton family? Hyatt, I think?
Yep.
The hotel chain.
I just wanted to call because she was part of a panel or actually one-on-one, back-to-back interview type of forum called the Washington Ideas Forum, which is hosted by The Atlantic. I think that's a magazine or newspaper, and happened over the weekend. C-SPAN is running the reruns. And she has personally, she stated during her interview, which is a very enlightening, insightful one, she's met with over 1,300 business leaders in America, and I'm sure that included some Fortune 500 companies and multinationals, and not a single one of them made any comments or concerns about the raising of minimum wage.
Mm.
This entire hoax hosted by the Republican Party about minimum wage is going to destroy jobs has not originated from the mouth of any
business person.
Business owner.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing, Kurt. If raising the minimum wage either A, created incredible distress for business, or B, caused the GDP to go down, the economy to sag, unemployment to go up, employment to go down, if it caused any of those negative consequences, the minimum wage has been raised somewhere between 30 and 40 times since 1935 when it was created. If any one year had ever had a bad consequence of raising the minimum wage, every Republican would have that memorized. And anytime any Democrat said, you know, let's raise the minimum wage, they go, oh, my God, 1974. Remember 1974? They raised the minimum wage and the stock market crashed the next day. I mean, or whatever, you know. Or they raised the minimum wage and unemployment went up 0.3%. Or they raised the minimum wage and GDP over the next 6 months went down. But it's never happened. Every time the minimum wage is increased, it increases employment, it increases GDP, and it does so for a very simple reason. You're injecting money at the bottom of the economy. Those the folks who are working on the minimum wage workers, they are the job creators. And if they have a little more money to spend, that money goes into the economy, it stimulates the economy, it stimulates demand, and now employers have to hire more people to meet that demand. So, yeah, spot on, Kurt. anyhow, thank you very much for the call. Well said. We don't have an alert for this, do we? We don't have an NPR alert. We should have done this as part of our Fox News alert. I've been complaining about this since I heard it on Thursday. I was just absolutely shocked. On Thursday morning, on Morning Edition, the NPR show, the national political reporter for NPR, Mara Liasson, who is, shall we say, friendly toward Republicans, at least in my experience from listening, the two states that have the greatest potential to flip the entire country, the Senate, right, the entire United States Senate, Republican, are Iowa and Colorado. And so I was astonished on Thursday when I heard Mara Liasson basically lying about Cory Gardner and his positions on national public radio and pitching for women to vote for him. And then on Friday, they did this, let's interview a Republican, and the Republican, it was all about Cory Gardner. I mean, this is a national network. There are 50 states in this country, plus the District of Columbia. The only one they highlighted was Colorado. And then on Monday of this week, they went back to Colorado and said, okay, now today we're going to get a Democrat. And they found some Democrat who's also voting for Cory Gardner because he's a farmer, you know, and it makes things out of the soil, and it's like Cory Gardner. So it's like 3 days in a row, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, NPR is pitching Cory Gardner instead of Mark Udall, pitching the Republican in Colorado. And I'm scratching my head going, okay, the media in the United States, most trusted by progressives is NPR, the media in the United States that reaches the largest number of single women who are, I mean, these are the folks who need to turn out in Colorado to get Mark Udall reelected. That media is NPR, and they're going after Mark Udall, and they're promoting Cory Gardner. Here's what Mara Liasson had to say.
That's one of the biggest changes this year. You see Republicans acting a lot differently. It's not just that Republicans are not making mistakes like the ones you mentioned. They are affirmatively going after the women's vote this year by changing their positions. For instance, in Colorado, Cory Gardner, the Republican, has disavowed his support for a personhood amendment. He's also coming out in favor of over-the-counter birth control. And on that issue, he now agrees with Planned Parenthood. So Republicans aren't fighting the last war, and in some cases they are really cutting into Democrats' support among women, and that's a real problem for Democrats.
No, it's a real problem for Democrats when you go on National Public Radio and tell these stories, Mara. Here's the fact. Cory Gardner still supports the personhood bill. In fact, he's the co-sponsor of it, number one. And number two, here's what Planned Parenthood has to say about Mara Liasson's report. Well, excuse me, about Cory Gardner saying, yeah, let's make birth control over the counter. This is from their website, right? PlannedParenthoodAction.org. You can read this yourself. Planned Parenthood Action Fund supports any effort to expand access to birth control, including efforts to make some forms of birth control available over the counter. At the same time, it is important that voters know the truth about these claims by politicians running for office. They are empty gestures. If Cory Gardner and others were serious about expanding access to birth control, they wouldn't be trying to repeal the no copay birth control benefit, reduce the Title X funding for birth control, or cut women off from Planned Parenthood's preventative health services. This is simply a cynical political attempt to whitewash his terrible record and agenda for women's health. The reality is that Cory Gardner's proposal would actually cost women more by forcing them to pay out of pocket for the birth control that they are now getting at no cost thanks to the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare. And this is from Dawn Lagunes, the executive vice president of Planned Parenthood Action Fund. Says, we would welcome a sincere conversation about expanding birth control access for women. Sadly, Cory Gardner has not offered one. I just find this bizarre. If Colorado goes Republican, it may be because of NPR. Isn't that shocking? Mike, in New Philadelphia, Ohio. Mike, we got a minute to the break. It's all yours.
Hi. You were talking about having a paper ballot.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you use, whether it's a paper ballot, whether it's a voting machine. If the state's going to restrict your access to the ballot booth, it doesn't matter what form you're using to vote. In our state, John Husted has shortened the early voting thing. The district I'm in, the Democrats haven't even put up a candidate against Bob Gibbs.
Hmm.
So your choice is nobody. You got Bob Gibbs or zero.
Wow.
Our governor, God bless him, John Kasich, refused to debate his opponent. Mike DeWine and John Husted, both are Republicans, and they've skewed the election like they do every time they're in power so that your chances to vote are minimal. I'm a C-SPAN junkie, and I call these guys every day across the nation, both parties. Two people that will not talk to you are Micah from Florida. As soon as he finds out you're not from Florida, they hang up on you. And Wyden from Oregon, I tried to get his email, and they told me he did not have an email.
Right. You got to fill out the form on their website. Very, very interesting, Mike. Thanks a lot for the call. You're right. Plan B is.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Plan A is to make it hard to vote. Plan B is to make it impossible to vote, knocking you off the rolls, as we've had several people call and say it happened to them. We'll be back 15 minutes before the end. And welcome back, Steve, in Perrysville, Indiana, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. Hey, Steve, you got a story for us?
How you doing this morning?
I am great, but I'll get better, Steve. How about you?
Oh, I'm great. I went out and voted. They have this machine there. I'm legally blind. They got this machine that you can electronic vote, but I told them I'd rather have the paper ballot. My wife helps me
mm-hmm.
fill it out because I'm not going with any computer
yeah.
to vote on. And I done fine. I can see, but I just have a hard time seeing the little dots that they want you to fill in and stuff.
Right. So you voted, and you had an okay experience
voted
voting?
I voted Democrat, and I think everybody better get out there and vote today, or they may end up losing their Medicare and their Social Security. We'll go to the Wall Street and everything. And
yeah, this is the Republican agenda. George Bush in 2005 tried to privatize Social Security, take that $2.7 trillion trust fund and hand it over to Jamie Dimon on Wall Street. And, you know, the Democrats fortunately stopped him, but you know, this is what it was all about, and they will do it again. They will do it again. And Ted Cruz just did an interview yesterday where he said the first thing that Congress should do, that the Senate should do, is start investigating President Obama. This is like, you know, they're getting ready for impeachment. It is nuts. Steve, thank you for the call. Ken in Rhinelander, Wisconsin, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Ken.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to touch on what I feel are the two cancers of our society, which is greed and prejudice. it seems to me that we cannot possibly survive long term unless there is balance among these two things. There has to be spendable income in order to create jobs. I heard you touch on this just a little while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that job creators are the spenders. And
right.
The Republicans constantly take spendable income away from the middle class and the people that actually go out and spend money.
Right.
And it just seems to me that it cannot possibly work long term. Now, I'm talking past our lifetimes. You know, long term, if we don't have balance, the key word is balance. Among spenders and job creators, there has to be a healthy balance, doesn't there?
Yeah, there does. And there's not that healthy balance right now. We are in a situation right now that economically, when you look at the charts and graphs, looks very much like 1929. And that's not a good thing, you know.
The first thing our illustrious Governor Walker did was take spendable income away from people that go out and spend money.
Right.
And you have to have that spendable income. How can any I constantly hear that small business is the backbone of our fiscal society, but if you don't have money to spend on these businesses, how can they survive?
Right.
You know, it's not gay marriage, gun control or abortion or any of that stuff. The cancers are greed and prejudice. And how do you keep a healthy balance on that? The government is needed to a point because there's always someone waiting around the corner to take advantage.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. It's very, very, very well said. Ken, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for your trenchant observations, and thanks for voting. We will be back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Department of Justice investigators to 18 states to look for attempts at voter suppression. The usual tricks that the Republicans are up to. It's interesting that the Department of Justice, to the best of my knowledge, is not sending anybody out looking for, quote, double voting, voter fraud, in-person impersonation, things like that, because it doesn't happen. Right? It just doesn't happen. But they are looking to see if there are any places in these states that have a long history of disenfranchising people because of their race, if the Republicans are up to that old trick. So, and I would bet just about anything that they are. Luke Vargas with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, is up in New Hampshire and on the line with us. Hey, Luke, welcome back to the program.
Hey, good afternoon.
So what's going on there?
Well, I was just visiting some of the seacoast towns, about a half an hour east of Manchester. They're saying turnout is really high. I don't really like to talk about polls too much, and so the only real quasi-scientific thing we have is where does turnout stand midday? Everyone is spinning this to their advantage. So I'll point out that all these conservative pundits have flooded the airways in New Hampshire, beginning, you know, just moments after the polls opened this morning to say, high turnout is a great thing for Scott Brown. To the extent that I'm starting to doubt whether that's an authentic assessment of things, and that might just be a talking point to say.
No, it's what they're trying to say. The subtext to that is targeting Democrats, and the subtext message is don't bother to vote. There's no need.
Right. Don't even try.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like it's going to be a neck and neck race. I'll point out that yesterday I was with Chris Christie, who was on this crazy barnstorming 7-state. Private jet Republican Governors Association tour of New England.
Right.
And he was asked about all these different races, and he sort of pulled back and said to all the journalists, look, New England is going to be the surprise here. You're asking me about the races in Massachusetts and Maine and Connecticut. You got to look. This is the part of the country where I think the Republicans are going to do surprisingly well, and I'm sort of inclined to agree. You know, there are 14 gubernatorial races that are marked right now as being too close to call, and 5 of them are in New England. But one thing a little bit beneath that headline is the fact that, well, you could say, there are all these gubernatorial races that are so close. What's so interesting is that the Senate races in most of these states are not close. You know, Susan Collins is going to hang on in Maine. Jack Reed in Rhode Island isn't going anywhere. And so it's a little funny that in an election where we were sort of told that, because of the dysfunction in Washington, frustration with the president and his agenda, that, you know, basically anyone who's in office is going to get voted out. it's funny. It looks like voters are taking out their frustration on the residents of the governor's mansion and not really willing, at least with the current slate of senators up for re-election in this part of the country, willing to toss them out as well.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Well, we'll see how it plays out. Got anything else for us?
Well, I'll just point out I'm heading down to Boston later tonight to see the Republican gubernatorial nominee Charlie Baker's reception. He's very upbeat. Massachusetts does have early voting, which New Hampshire does not. That would seem to favor Charlie Baker, who's had pretty sizable leads in the polls over Martha Coakley until just recently, and he still maintains that lead. New Hampshire doesn't have early voting, so you can take that sort of toss-up in the polls to mean the race may be a lot closer. Massachusetts may be poised to elect another Republican governor in the tradition of Paul Bellucci and Mitt Romney and others. So, one state where Deval Patrick going left isn't a sign that the state is really permanently ready to do that.
Yeah, amazing stuff. Luke Vargas with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Luke, thanks for the report.
Sure thing. Take care.
Sure. Great talking with you. Shirley in Tallahassee, Florida. Hey, Shirley, thanks for calling in.
Yes, good afternoon, Tom. I'm here in the lounge at the doctor's quarters, and I was listening on the satellite.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to talk about this bridging the chasm, this kind of reverse psychology that's going on in the media as it relates to this election, that somehow whitewashing, as you stated, the policy positions by a corporate media, a pundit class, who really are lawyers. When you look at most of these pundit class commentary that we hear on the cable brought forward, are lawyers. They're not journalists. And I, too, watched that Atlantic Ideas Forum over the weekend with the Commerce Secretary, where she pushed back hard from John Hallward interviewing her on this notion that the economy that we have for over a half century, that was a direct connection between the problems that afflicted our American society and the remedies that were offered from the New Deal, the GI Bill, education, massive investment in public education and universities, and later in K-12, the exclusion and of blacks from the American dream, and then the mass movement and the revolution and civil rights that made a great down payment on redeeming that exclusion.
Right.
Then we have now come to a society where we have an African-American, black, multiracial president, and we're being told in the national media that that is the reason why we have a polarization in our society, that we've had polarization in the society for years as our country, which I love, family in Kansas, in the context of living in urban, and I'm now in Florida, my husband and I, who are both in the academy as physicians, black physicians, and we've lived a multiplicit life. We have two who are residents right now in the medical field. And so I think we have a very good understanding with our patient load and with our lives of what is really in the broader society before we see people every day who are struggling and who are doing well.
Yeah.
So I just think that the Democratic Party, in the context of I'm a Democrat, my husband and I, this false equivalency that we've allowed to be the message and not push back. Now, the Commerce Secretary, that woman was very, very clear about the fact that the corporate could not in any way state that this president has not given them a good bottom line.
Oh, no. If from a business point of view and from a billionaire point of view, the economy is doing better than ever. Oh, Shirley, I'm sorry. I just dropped your call. But thank you very much for calling. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. And in the studio with us, Brendan Fisher, the General Counsel with the Center for Media and Democracy, PRWatch.org, also SourceWatch.org, and AlecExposed.org. Talk about doing the Lord's work. You guys are doing such great stuff. It is so cool. Brendan, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Great
to have you with us. I've got an ad that... originally, everybody thought, oh, this is interesting. The Libertarian is trying to get the stoner vote. This is an ad that's running in Wisconsin, and there's versions, variations on this that are apparently running in North Carolina. And Danielle says she's down in Florida. She's from Florida. Here it is. Let's check this out. Yes, no, maybe?
Do you want to see marijuana legalized in Wisconsin? There's something you can do about it. Vote for a candidate for governor who supports legalization. Someone who shares our values. Vote for Robert Burke. Get Burke. Get blazed.
Great. Now, that's not the one I saw. The one I saw had some kind of tie-dyed T-shirt, saying, let's get stoned, pot, or something like that. But what's the story with these ads, Brendan?
So these just popped up in the last few days. They're web-only ads, so they're not reported anywhere. But they come from the American Future Fund, which is a group that received 92% of its funding in 2012 from two Koch brothers conduits, Freedom Partners and Center to Protect Patient Rights. So this is a Koch group. And American Future Fund in the past has supported Scott Walker. They don't mention Scott Walker in those ads. They also don't mention that Walker opposes legalization in any forms and Mary Burke supports medical marijuana. But this seems like a cynical, last-minute ploy to peel off younger voters from supporting the Democratic candidate, Mary Burke. Robert Burke, interestingly enough, the one who this ad purports to support, has denounced it. He says it doesn't reflect well on the legalization effort. It doesn't reflect well on libertarians either. And he feels that it not only is designed to peel off young voters from the Democratic Party. He also thinks that it's aimed at peeling potential libertarians off from the Libertarian Party and get them to vote Republican by appealing to these sort of divisive social issues.
Because if you're an independent and you lean conservative, mm-hmm. you're probably offended by the idea of pot legalization or full legalization, even if you're, libertarian inclined.
Yeah, I think like the people who oppose crony capitalism, who don't like Walker's Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, where it gives taxpayer dollars to corporations that happen to be Walker donors, sort of the libertarian oriented Republicans,
right.
who may be with the libertarians on some economic issues, but may not be with them on social issues. I think Robert Burke has said that part of the idea of this ad is appeal. Those voters off from voting for the Libertarian Party.
Isn't the Libertarian candidate Burke's last name the exact same identical to letter by letter last name as Mary Burke, the Democratic candidate for governor of Wisconsin?
Yeah. So it made it pretty easy to
confuse them
or
conflate them. Now, did the Koch brothers play a hand in that too? Did they decide who was going to be in? Richard Nixon's old advice was, don't win the election. Pick the guy you're going to run against. When Chuck Colson went up to Maine and snuck Ed Muskie some LSD and suddenly Ed Muskie, who would have easily beat Nixon in the 72 election, suddenly Ed Muskie standing on the back of a flatbed truck crying and sobbing and talking about his poor wife. And, you know, Nixon knew that he had to he needed to run against, you know, somebody like George McGovern. Mm-hmm. He couldn't run against Ed Muskie. Mm-hmm. And so is this the Koch brothers picking who's going to run against Scott Walker?
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting. The way that I took this ad is I think it's further proof that the Kochs are really not libertarians.
No, they're not. They've decided to take over the Republican Party.
They've decided to take over the Republican Party, and this does not reflect well on libertarians. And like I mentioned, Robert Burke denounced the ad.
Right.
And I think this goes along with the Kochs funding, the focus on the family spinoff, Citizen League, or funding the Independent Women's Forum, or some of these groups that want government intervention in a woman's right to choose, or want government to prohibit gay people from being able to marry. These are not libertarian issues. These are anti-libertarian issues
right.
that the Kochs are funding. And here you have these ads that probably are going to drive people away from supporting libertarian candidates or supporting libertarian causes. I mean, it's just further proof that the Kochs are really trying to elect Republicans that are going to push a deregulatory agenda that benefits Koch industries and push a low-tax, anti-tax agenda that benefits the Koch brothers.
It's all about the billionaires in the business.
Yeah.
Right? So we're talking with Brennan Fisher, the general counsel with the Center for Media and Democracy, PRWatch.org, SourceWatch.org, AlecExposed.org. Brennan, you guys have filed is it a complaint or a lawsuit? What is it with the IRS?
It's an IRS complaint.
Mm-hmm.
It's an IRS complaint.
Tell me about this.
Sure. So we're at the final hours of the 2014 midterm elections. It's going to be the most expensive midterm in history, around $4 billion spent, and an unprecedented amount of dark money, undisclosed dollars being funneled into our elections by way of these 501c4 and 501c6 nonprofits. And 501c4 nonprofits, they're organized, or they're supposed to be organized to advance social welfare. And as we've seen with many of these Koch groups, like American Future Fund, the group that was running this pot ad, they're operating as political committees. So they're abusing the tax code. They're abusing the tax code, operating as political committees, rather than operating primarily as social welfare organizations.
But the IRS has been basically castrated. I mean, there's a more popular word for it. This is escaping me, but because you know all this stuff going on with the investigations by the Republicans
yeah.
into the IRS is trying to stop Tea Party. You know, we know it's nonsense. We know it's all a lie. But the upside from the Republican point of view has been that the IRS is now. You know, the administration and the IRS are now so afraid to touch anything that has to do with Republicans. I mean, Lois Lerner's lost her job. There's other people who are, you know, sweating. I mean,
I think groups like Wisconsin Club for Growth and like many of those in the conservative movement have intimidated the IRS from taking too much action on really hammering these groups that are operating as political committees but claiming to operate as social welfare nonprofits.
Right.
And part of the way they've done that is by making this completely implausible claim that these ads that might name a candidate and criticize their credentials, but don't explicitly tell voters how to vote, don't explicitly say vote for or against this particular candidate,
right.
that is issue advocacy as opposed to political intervention. But what we have in Wisconsin with Wisconsin Club for Growth, we have this ongoing campaign finance investigation into Wisconsin Club for Growth coordinating with Governor Walker during the 2011 and 2012 recall elections. And
yikes.
That investigation is stalled, but as a result of that investigation, we have internal emails from Wisconsin Club for Growth. We have internal financial documents from Wisconsin Club for Growth that makes it unequivocal, makes it completely beyond doubt that they were operating as a political committee in 2011 and 2012.
Illegally.
Well, they lied to the IRS. They told the IRS that they spent $0 on politics in
right.
2011 and 2012, when the evidence, the internal evidence and their financial records shows that they spent around $20 million influencing Wisconsin elections and with the purpose of influencing Wisconsin elections.
Right. And this year, that's probably going to be a lot more than that. And they're going to get away with it. Your effort, your complaint is going to be adjudicated over the next year or so, right?
So it goes to the IRS. They don't comment on the status of any ongoing investigation. We think the evidence is exceptionally strong because we do have these internal documents showing Wisconsin Club for Growth lying to the IRS. And that's a federal crime. And we've also asked the U.S. attorneys in Wisconsin to investigate this potential federal crime that has the potential for $100,000 in fines and up to 3 years in jail.
Wow. Wow. Wouldn't that be interesting to see Charles Koch marched off to jail? Frog marched out. Brendan Fisher, the General Counsel of the Center for Media and Democracy, PRWatch.org. Thank you, Brendan.
Sure, thanks for having me.
Great having you with us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Also, SourceWatch.org and AlecExposed.org. Great work they're doing there. We'll be back. Thanks. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And, oh, by the way, I'll mention it now and I'll mention it again in a minute. If you call in and you get a voicemail that says this line is no longer connected or something like that, it's some sort of a weird error associated with our phone company. And it only happens when all 12 of our incoming, we've got 12 lines. And when all 12 lines are on hold, in other words, you would normally expect to get a busy signal, but instead, for some reason, the phone system is rolling it over into a you've reached a number that doesn't exist kind of message. So don't worry, don't fret. You know, don't call. To report that, just, you know, wait a few minutes, wait till somebody hangs up, and, you know, I take a call and somebody hangs up, and then call in. So Morris in Long Beach, California, listening to KPFK. Hey, Morris, what's on your mind today? Morris?
Hello, I'm sorry, Professor. I apologize. Just a moment, please.
It's quite all right. You are on the air.
I wanted to share with you. You ready to go?
Sure.
I'm Bolton. And I don't like war. More talk, more peace. Maybe send the Peace Corps. I'm voting. I'm voting for change. We have a government that says corporations are men. I'm voting. You know it's the fact. Politicians taking money from us, smoking the crack. I'm voting. Like a bowl of cherries. Got to get together. People got to cut the military. I'm voting. Yeah, that's right. So, Professor, I wanted to share something with you.
That was great, Morris. That was great. Did you write that? You.
Of course I did.
You are brilliant.
Thank you. I want to... Ms. McConnell wants to say something to you. You got a moment?
Sure.
Yeah, this is the Tom Hartman Program. Listen, there's a rumor going around that ship that we own, my wife and I, that flies under the Libyan flag, had 90 pounds of cocaine on it. That's not true. That's the Democrats trying to undermine my great work in the Congress of the United States. So thank you very much for that. Morris, say something to the professor. Well, that was Mitch. So he said that 90 pounds of cocaine wasn't here, so I'm going to take a word.
Morris, I don't know what that story is about. I've never heard of the 90 pounds of cocaine. Is there an actual story?
Amy Goodman, this morning.
Really? Well, I didn't watch Amy's show this morning, so tell me about it.
Well, anyway, I religiously do these kind of things, but there was a gentleman she was interviewing on there. I didn't have my notebook with me, but if you just archive Amy Goodman this morning.
Yeah, I'll have to check her website.
But what blew my mind was how he was married to a woman that made him rich, of course, $22 million. Feinstein has $43 million, by the way. I was going to ask her for part of that $50 million, but she's part of the establishment. I don't think she'd give it to us. But anyway, what surprised me was how he's married to a gal who has a shipping company that flies under a Libyan flag. Right. This is an American representative. What are you doing affiliating and associating with something like that? And did you know that the number one donor was the Chamber of Commerce in terms of dark money?
I'm not surprised.
They've got to be the number one donor of dark money in this country. But you got some other call, Professor. I'll give it to you later.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Morris. I think, you know, actually that it's not the Chamber of Commerce. I think it's the Koch brothers. But there's a few other right-wing billionaires out there. The Koch brothers have these meetings a couple times a year. And, in fact, I think it was Scott Walker. I was looking at the story yesterday over at Center for American Progress's blog, thinkprogress.org. I believe it was Scott Walker. It might have been Rick Scott. I get all my Scotts mixed up. But I think it was Scott Walker. Went to one of these Koch brother gigs, you know, and didn't even report it. Just took all these gifts. Not a gift, but, you know, free accommodations and meals and whatnot. Or at least that was what was being alleged. I'll have to track the story down. We'll be right back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Jeff in Denver. How you doing, Jeff?
Pretty good. Hey, before I get to my main point, I just want to point out that actually
NPR News update and a Fox News update are one and the same as far as Mara Liasson's concerned.
That's my experience, yeah.
Yeah, and they actually had...
in fact, she's on Fox, isn't she, with some regularity?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, yeah. She's on Fox and NPR, so it's one and the same.
Yeah.
Jeez. So it is an NPR Fox News update, and they NPR actually changed her ethics code to allow Mara to appear on Fox.
Really?
Yeah, Media Matters did a story on that.
Wow. Okay.
I'll forward that to you.
Thank you.
Yesterday I had a person working for Coloradans for Better Schools, which is a kind of fake front group. You know, it's we have a ballot issue 68 where they're trying to bring expand gambling in Colorado, but they're making it sound like it's all to get money for schools.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he came to the door, and I said I was very much against the issue. And he said, oh, he is very nice. He said, can I take your ballot in for you?
Really?
Yeah, so here's a person that, you know, on the opposite side of the issue, and he's offered to take my ballot in, which is legal in Colorado. They can collect up to 10. But I politely reject his offer. And this is one of the, you know, I'm one of the who is very much against mail-in ballots. I've been working on election issues for years. But this is one of the problems is security of the ballot along the way. And
right.
So you've got to watch out for ballot collectors, for one. You've got to make sure the chain of custody is maintained all the way to the wherever you drop the ballot off.
That's incredible. So they're going door to door, and if you disagree with them, they ask for your ballot because you're doing mail-in ballots.
I mean, I don't have the counter thing. I don't know what he would have done if I agreed with him. He may have taken it, too. He just was offering me to collect ballots.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the thing is, who knows, would it get there or not? I don't know. I'm not making any accusation, but we've got to maintain ballot security. There have been a lot of cases, actually, where ballots have been collected and not delivered.
Well, they should just ban ballot collecting. Everybody has to use the mail, or they have to drop them off in a box. I'm pretty sure that's how it works in Oregon.
I don't know. But even there, I don't even trust, you know, the mail. That's problematic, too. There are a lot of reasons to me to be against mail. One thing, if paper ballots nowadays are still counted by computers. Counting by computers is the problem. If you read Brad Blog or anybody who reports on elections much, you'll see that scanners that count paper ballots still have a very high problematic rate. I can't even say it.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, there have always been problems with ballots, even when they were paper ballots, and then you had Florida in 2000 and all these other things.
There are other methods, though, that work better.
I absolutely agree, but that should not discourage anybody from voting today.
Oh, no, absolutely. Everybody should vote. There's no question. The thing is, hey, if there are problems, the more you vote, the less likely the problems are to, you know.
There you go. Which, you know, if they're going to screw up or steal 1 or 2 or 3% of the vote, then we need to show up with 4 or 5 or 6% more of the vote. Jeff, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for that thought-provoking insight. Barvo in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Barvo, what's up?
Hello, Tom. We've talked before, and I'm going to start this off as I always do. I admire you. You and I don't agree on a lot of things, but I admire you. Not anybody I'd love to sit down and have dinner with and a couple of bottles of wine, but this morning I would like to just discuss a couple of issues. Tom, I don't hear you talk much on your program about personal responsibility and self-reliance. You want people to depend on the government. That bothers me.
Well, Barvo, you're misrepresenting me. I don't want people to depend on the government, and there's nobody that I know of who is opposed to personal responsibility or self-reliance. That's crazy talk. That's you know, Republican bumper sticker talk. That's Fox News kind of stuff. You've got to be smarter than that.
I'm not a Republican. I'm a conservative. If I could vote conservative in Texas, I would. But that's the thing. I don't. It's my view that I don't often hear you talk about that. You seem to be always talking. I'm not.
It's because because it's code, Barvo. When you hear Republicans talking about personal responsibility and individual, whatever the other phrase was that you were using, what they're really saying is, we don't want to pay for somebody's welfare. We don't want to pay for somebody's health insurance. We don't want to pay for somebody's education. We don't want to pay for public schools. We don't want to pay for public streets. They should be privatized. People should be able to make money collecting tolls on these things. We don't want to pay for, you know, people's fire departments. They should be privatized. We don't want to pay. You know, that's really what they're saying. Cut taxes on billionaires and do away with social services. And I think that FDR was absolutely right in 1936 when he said a necessitous man is not a free man. If you don't have a job, if you don't have a home, if you don't have health insurance and you are sick, you are not free. And so if you want to have freedom, there's a certain basic minimum threshold that people have to be able to achieve in order to be free in the United States. And for a lot of people, that means having the government intervene.
Well,
Social Security, case in point. If somebody is, you know, deeply in poverty and they're over 65, are they free?
Well, Social Security is, that's another whole subject.
Social Security is a government program. It's an insurance program against poverty. One third of the people who get Social Security are widows, orphans, and disabled people. The other two thirds are retired people. And it's cut poverty among people over 65 more than in half in the United States.
I get Social Security because I'm 82.
Yeah.
I paid into it all my life also.
Yeah. Barbo, I got to run here, but thanks for the call. We'll live to fight again. Thank you very much. We'll be back. 28 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
The true measure of a society, apropos what Barbo was saying, is how it treats its most vulnerable citizens. Helping you in the water cooler wars, Tom Hartman here with you. And time for our crazy alert for the day.
And now for something completely crazy.
You so crazy.
You're crazy.
It's crazy. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Oh, now you're just being crazy.
So this guy in San Francisco, CBS San Francisco reported this. This guy in San Francisco dresses up for Halloween. Halloween was, a few days ago, a week ago. And this guy dresses up for Halloween as a Fox News reporter. What could possibly go wrong, right? Here's the story. This is from CBS News. I'm over at the CBSNews.com website. A man wearing a Fox News reporter costume on Halloween was assaulted after a man told him he hates Fox News. CBS San Francisco reports the suspect allegedly grabbed the victim's microphone, placed it down the front of his pants, proceeded to rub it on his crotch. The suspect then attacked the victim with an aluminum tennis racket before fleeing as officers approached. Boy, Bill O'Reilly's got to be swallowing hard. And anyhow, that's our crazy. I guess the lesson here is don't dress up as a Fox News reporter on Halloween. I mean, it's just, whew, it says something. Daniel in Sirocco, New Mexico. Hey, Daniel, what's up? You voted?
Yeah, I voted. I live in a little town called Socorro, and I voted. My place to vote is San Antonio, New Mexico, and I filled out my Democratic ballot and put it in and watched the number turn from 40 to 41. Tom, there's a way that you could really help stop the drug war. You need to do a show from Denver and go in a pot shop, buy a cookie, and do a show with Bernie, and you could call it the Munchies with Bernie Show. I think, but it would be fun for me as a listener to listen to you after you've done a cookie, and it's legal in Colorado.
It might not be so fun. I don't know.
No, but I mean, well, how will we ever know?
Maybe you don't want to know, but, and Tom one Stone, Tom Drunk, it's whatever.
No. One other point I wanted to make, they had a constitutional amendment, number 5, on our ballot,
yep,
proposing to amend Article 12, Section 7 of the Constitution of New Mexico to preserve the land grant permanent funds by increasing the duty of care, removing the restrictions on the type of investment that may be made, and increasing the threshold amount for additional distributions. I wonder if the Koch brothers and Alex are trying to write something to get our money from our land trust that we have in New Mexico, which we pay for our schools with.
Of course they are. It's like the billionaire agenda is strip the middle class to the point where people are walking around wearing barrels and just strip the middle class and then pile that money into the billionaires' pockets and into the transnational corporations, move it to China, move it offshore where it doesn't get taxed. I mean, they've been doing this for a couple of decades now, since Ronnie Reagan made it all possible. And it's just, it's obscene. It's absolutely obscene.
It says removing the restrictions on the type of investment that may be made.
Right.
And you wonder, so we're going to put money in Wall Street. I mean,
right. You give it to a hedge fund. You give it to Bain Capital. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it's like, it's scary. But anyway, I have an idea on reparations. It's real quick.
Mm.
Just give everyone a college education. Make it free, and that'll be reparations for everybody. Everybody will have.
Right, college or trade school.
Kind of an education.
And in doing that, we would just be doing what most European countries do, and even some South American countries. Mexico has free college. I mean, for God's sake. We would just be, bringing ourselves up to the standards of other countries around us. Daniel, thank you for the call. Fascinating stuff. Doug in Jacksonville, Florida. Hey, Doug, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Hey, I voted this morning. I had a unique experience. They scanned my ID through a computer.
Right.
It printed out a receipt. Then I took that to another table for my ballot. They wrote my ballot number on that receipt and kept my receipt.
Right.
So they could basically look back at my ballot number and see how I voted. They scanned my driver's license through a computer.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
My information. I voted. And they know which ballot was mine.
Right. You bet you voted on a paper ballot in Jacksonville, Florida.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Huh. Fascinating. We need to learn more about that. Doug, thanks for the heads up on that. I'm gonna see what I can learn about it. Paul in Newport Beach, California. Hey, Paul.
Oh, it's a beautiful 72-degree clear sky here on Balboa Island, and I want to tell you, I voted last week, and I'm a big advocate for absentee ballots for lots of reasons, not the least of which is I don't have to go down to the fire station and vote. I can, in the calm of my living room with our kitchen with a cup of coffee and my wife, we can look over our notes that we've made and we can.
Yeah, that's how Louise and I used to vote by mail in Oregon. And it was great because we would just sit down for 15, 20 minutes. We'd get a copy of Willamette Week, which was the weekly Portland newspaper, and they would have a voter guide in there. And it was always very informative.
Yeah, and I think if everybody did that, it would be really great for the post office too. I like the post office, and even though I use forever stamps,
I just think states should. I think that the ballots should come postage paid. That's the one.
That's true, and that would be nice, and they're not. But
they're not, and I think that that's a violation of the 26th Amendment, the poll tax amendment. Because, it says that you shall not have to pay anything basically to vote. There shall be no poll tax. And if you got to pay 50 cents, 55 cents, whatever stamps cost these days, that, even though it's 50 cents, it's still, a lot of ballots don't get turned in or might not get turned in for lack of a stamp because people didn't realize they needed to put a stamp on. And then you got a spoiled ballot and it should be free.
But all our representatives and senators have franking privileges. Maybe we should have it too for that.
Exactly. In fact, you could just frank all of the letters by your senators or something. I mean, you're right. You're right. This should fall into the purview of franking. Paul, thank you for the call. Fascinating conversation. Tara in Hopland, California. Hey, Tara, what's up?
Well, first of all, I wanted to tell you that in California, if you send in a mail-in ballot, you do have to sign the envelope. So your ballot doesn't actually have your name on it.
Right. Same thing in Oregon. There's an envelope within the envelope, and you sign the you sign the envelope that the ballot's in, and then you place that envelope with the ballot in a second envelope, which you mail.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But what I wanted to talk about today was NPR, and I'm really glad that you brought that up because I stopped listening to NPR about 6 months ago when I all of a sudden realized they're not for their national public radio, but they're not acting like they're for the public good because they were doing a story on Obama, and I don't even remember what the story was. My whole takeaway from it was they kept on calling him Mr. Obama.
Really?
Not once. I mean, it was so prevalent that I was like, wait a minute, I have to listen to this whole
thing. That's what they do on Fox News instead of saying President Obama.
Yeah,
or they just say Obama.
President Obama or the president.
Right.
They only called him Mr. Obama. He's not. He's the president.
Mm.
And I just thought it was so insulting. I stopped listening to NPR. I wrote them a letter, telling them how offended I was.
Yeah.
And I just stopped listening at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really a sad thing. You know, Ronald Reagan took a meat axe to NPR's budget or started the process. And now they're down to the point where only 7% of their revenue, if I'm remembering correctly, is coming from government funds. And so they have to raise the other 93%. And they raise a fair amount of that from big corporations and billionaires like the Koch brothers. And so, you know, that's whose tune they're dancing to, tragically. And this false balance. And, you know, yeah, let's change our ethics rules so we can have a Fox News person on, you know, Mara Elias. The whole thing is bizarre. Tara, thanks for the call. Thanks for the story. Ray in Fairfax, California. Hey, Ray.
Hey, Tom, how's it going? Happy Good. Midterm election day to you.
Thank you. And back at you, Rob.
I wanted to alert all the listeners that there's a great tool if you're a last-minute voter to check out pollvault.com, P-O-L-L-V-A-U-L-T.com.
Okay.
And basically what you do is you put in your zip code, and it brings you a representation of your actual ballot with all of the initiatives and the candidates running.
Mm-hmm.
If you put in your street address or one that's close enough to you to be in your district, it'll show you your actual district races. Mm-hmm. And then you can go and get the endorsements and opinions from over 1,000 organizations, political parties, media outlets on how they're endorsing or not endorsing a candidate. So if you haven't had time to go through the book and you really want to vote, just pop onto the site, and with 5 minutes you can make up your decision, and you can take it with you on your smartphone or print it out when you go to the polls and take some of the pain out of voting.
That's great. That's great. Thanks for the heads up on that, Rob. I appreciate it. We're going to have somebody from 866OurVote.org. That's the website, www.866OURVOTE.org, with us. This is the election protection folks, so they'll be with us in the next hour, but you might want to check that out too. Ryan in Corvallis, Oregon. Hey, Ryan. Thanks for listening to X-Ray FM in Portland. What's up?
Hey, Tom. I was calling about mail-in voting we have here.
Yeah.
And I did it yesterday, even though I, you know, took my sweet time doing it. I guess I got the ballot a while ago. But what you were talking about just a couple of callers ago was I went to, you know, after class, I went to my favorite bar, got a basket of fries and a beer, and then filled out my ballot, and then walked a few blocks to the courthouse and dropped it in the box.
Yeah, what a great way to vote. I mean, I understand Jeff and Denver's concerns, but I mean, my experience was it was a great way to vote. Ryan, thank you for the call, and thanks for sharing your experience. And, yeah, I voted at the bar with a French fries and a beer. What a plan. That's great. It's 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Chano tells me in some counties they close the bars on Election Day. I wonder if that raises the Republican vote or the Democratic vote. Who does that help? Welcome back. 15 minutes before the hour. Bruce in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Bruce, you're on the air. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV and Dish Network.
Hey, Dr. Hartman. Thank you for taking my call, and happy voting day to you as well.
Thank you.
My quick question. I did my early absentee ballot voting, and for the first time in decades, I voted. And a question I wanted to ask you was, why would there be candidates on a ballot that do not where the their party affiliation is not stated on the ballot?
Well, there are some races that are called nonpartisan races. Typically, they're judicial races. Judges in many states or many counties, many places, judges are not allowed to declare a political affiliation. In some cities, the city council members are not allowed to declare political affiliation. I mean, there are dog catchers and whatnot. I mean, there are some races where
it's irrelevant.
Yeah, well, it's not so much that it's irrelevant as that the local community, I mean, whoever wrote the rules, whatever the rules got written, whether it was last week or 100 years ago, decided that this is not a race in which partisan politics should play a role.
Ah, because the one on my ballot here in Atlanta, in Fulton County, was for the Fulton County Soil and Water Conservation District Supervisor position.
Right.
So I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, so in theory, what you should do, I mean, my son has a degree in soil science. He would be the kind of person who should be on that ballot. What you should, you know, in theory, what you should be doing is saying, who actually understands soil and water science? And that should be the person that you vote for, rather than who's the Democrat or who's the Republican.
I wasn't sure. One was the incumbent and one was a woman. So I said, well, I feel there should be more women in politics. So I just voted for the woman. So yeah. That's what I did on in that situation.
That's fine. I mean, that's where I found the, you know, Willamette Week's voter guide so useful when we lived in Oregon. And I'm sure that there's something similar to it here in D.C., although there was only there were only two races that I didn't have some sense of who I was going to vote for when I went into the booth this morning, and there was only one ballot initiative, and that was legalizing pot, and that was a no-brainer. But in Oregon, the ballots were much more complex, and there would be all these ballot initiatives that you didn't know were coming, and all these small races, you know, judgeships and county supervisors and stuff like that, where I just had no idea. And the Willamette Week published a really good voter guide that, you know, basically gave you the background and all the people, and you could just, you know, make up your own mind. And I think in most places, in Atlanta, Creative Loafing is the weekly newspaper?
Yes,
in Atlanta?
Yeah, Creative Loafing.
Yeah, I'll bet Creative Loafing has a voter guide in it.
Yeah, so they had one in this past voting cycle, yes. And gave a rundown of the major positions that are being the candidates.
But they would tell you who the person for the water board, you know, who's got the best qualifications.
Well, yeah, they had generally a few of them, but not everybody. They focused mostly on the main candidates running for major offices. But something
right.
like the water conservation, they didn't mention anything about them. Soil and water conservation. Well, thank you, Dr. Tom. Oh,
yeah.
One other quick question, if possible. When are you going to come down to Atlanta Waves before signings?
I've got to get down there. You know, we lived down there for 13 years, and I've got a lot of good friends down there, and it's been 6-8 years since I was in Atlanta. I've got to get that. We can do a book signing or something. Bruce, I don't know, but when I do know and when I am going to be doing it, I will be sure and let you know. Thanks a lot for the call, Bruce. Great to hear from you. We'll be back. Talk media for the sane among us. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by Goats for the Old Goat.com and free-don.org. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service on the line with us. Hello, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
It's nice to see your smiling face. So what's happening in the world today?
Well, here in Montgomery County, very exciting. I mean, talk about complicated things on the ballot. We had some things on the ballot. Fortunately, I'd read ahead of time because we had a transportation thing that I didn't understand, but I read it several times. And then we had things like, you know, you talk about complicated things without D or R next to it. I think we had sloth handler and kitten petter and, you know, things like that.
That's something that Louise or I could run for, kitten petter.
No, you could, and you'd win.
Oh. Now,
meanwhile, Representative James Clyburn, Democrat of South Carolina, the number three Democrat in the House, said on MSNBC today that he thinks that they'd had some good candidates whose campaigns have suffered because they've not had good advisors on questions of race. And he singled out Kentucky Democratic Senate candidate Allison Lundigan Grimes, who he thinks alienated African-American voters by refusing to say, which she did very recently, in fact, again, whether she voted for President Obama in 2012.
Yeah, it's just plain old
stupid. He said, the fact of the matter is, I don't think her numbers started to plummet until after she botched that question so significantly.
Yeah, I agree. It astonishes me. I mean, Gary Peters in Michigan is openly embracing President Obama, and he's way ahead in the polls. And I don't, you know, Mary Landrieu, Allison Lundigan Grimes, there's a bunch of Democrats who are running from the president, and I think it's nuts. It's a terrible mistake. Anyway, back to you.
They're going to find out, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And I think the Democrats who run away from their own party and the leader of their own party and the president of their nation, I think they're going to be hurt by it badly.
Ralph Nader, prominent consumer advocate and perennial presidential candidate, is calling on House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi and other top party leaders to call it quits. He says Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, Steve Israel should now recognize the wisdom of baseball's three strikes and you're out. He says basically that he praised them for their hard work in a statement and fundraising prowess, but he said the result is just exemplifying the adage that nice guys finish last. And then he said between 2010 and 2014, they have demonstrated their inability to reverse a growing Republican majority espousing cruel, brutish, and harmful policies to almost any human interest, any environmental interest, and any Main Street interest in conflict with Wall Street demands for privileges and immunities of crony corporate capitalism and to any interest in waging peace over war.
I'm going to have Ralph on the TV show tonight. I'll see what he has to say, but I think he's shooting the messenger. I think if you want to point a finger of blame at, you know, why are the Democrats going down and the Republicans going up? It's very simple. It's in the Supreme Court. You know, 2010, Citizens United, and most recently McCutcheon. And now you've got, you know, something on the order of $2, maybe $3 billion coming into this election on the right side, on the Reich side. And, you know, so much of it unaccountable, untrackable. That's what's driving, I think, a lot of this dynamic. But anyway.
That'll be an interesting conversation.
Yes. We'll see. Ralph is not always happy
whereas,
with me. But...
whereas in most major polling, the economy has ranked highest on the list of issues voters care about, potential voters on Facebook have been talking taxes, marijuana, and Obamacare in the greatest numbers ahead of Election Day, according to the company. Facebook ranked those issues as the top three election-related topics that they were talking about on Monday, and education and ISIS were also in the top five.
Interesting.
It's a different interest.
Yeah. It's a little creepy, though, to know that Facebook is watching you and compiling stats about you.
Well, yeah, but we know they're creepy.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. If Republicans win control of the Senate, their first priority in the next Congress will be passing a budget, Republican National Committee Chairman Reince Priebus said today. He said on MSNBC, we will pass a budget in both chambers, number one, and we will pass the Keystone Pipeline, number two. And I actually think the president will sign the bill on the Keystone Pipeline because I think the pressure, he's going to be boxed in on that, and I think it's going to happen.
I think Reince Priebus is probably right. But, you know, time will tell.
Time will tell on that. Health and Human Services Secretary Sylvia Burwell is making a new push for governors who have not expanded Medicaid to embrace the options made available under Obamacare. In a speech to the National Association of Medicaid Directors today, she is calling on new governors elected today to reach out if they're interested in discussing their options. She's saying we're eager and willing to work with states that have yet to expand. Basically, if Democratic candidates win tonight in Florida, Maine, Kansas, Wisconsin, and Georgia, Medicaid could see 1.7 million more beneficiaries once they take office.
And according to Harvard University, 17,000 fewer people will die every year.
That's stunning.
Yeah. I mean, before Obamacare, they were saying around 40,000 Americans every year die because they lack access to health insurance. And now they've recalibrated the number. It's 17,000 Americans will die because of the red states that are refusing to take Medicaid expansion.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is a life and death issue. I saw a post over on Democratic Underground where this guy said he went to the polls with his daughter, his little kid, and somebody said something, and she said, Republicans kill people. I'm voting Democratic, or my daddy's voting Democratic. Just like, whoa. Well, yeah, 17,000 people this year. Anyhow, back to you, Victoria.
Secretary of State John Kerry said today that the U.S. will not, quote, agree to disagree with China on cyber issues, and that state-sponsored Chinese hacking is on the table at this week's talk. Kerry is headed to China for cyber talks ahead of President Obama's trip to Asia and Australia next week. Kerry will be there for an Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation meeting.
Very interesting.
The talk will be quite hot.
Thank you, Victoria.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Lee Fong is on the line with us, the investigative reporter for The Nation and Republic Report. TheNation.com has a new piece about how Mitch McConnell is bending every last campaign finance rule. Lee, welcome back.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Great. It is always wonderful to have you on the program, sir. Tell us, what is Mitch McConnell up to?
Well, Mitch McConnell is in the election of his lifetime. This is really a career-defining election because he's facing a very disciplined Democrat. It's a competitive race. And if he wins, and if the polls are correct, and Republicans take the Senate, he will be the majority leader of the Senate for the first time in his life. So it's a big election. But in order to win this election, Senator McConnell is bringing in all types of outside groups. These are 501c4 dark money groups, trade associations, super PACs, and they're all part of a constellation of get out the vote and electioneering efforts. Election law prohibits coordination between a candidate and outside groups like super PACs or dark money groups. However, it's clear that McConnell is coordinating on some level with these organizations. He's met with them. His staff members are married to leaders of these super PACs and dark money groups. There's a lot of evidence that there's coordination. However, the law that prohibits candidates from coordinating with outside groups has never really been enforced because of a deadlocked Federal Elections Commission. There's a 3-3. There's three Republicans and three Democrats on the Federal Election Commission. All three Republicans since 2010 have voted in lockstep to block any investigation of a potential violation.
Right, and it takes four votes to go forward with an investigation. Didn't it used to be that the FEC was three members of each party and then one member from the party of the president in office?
I don't believe that was the case in any recent time. In any case, the Department of Justice also has jurisdiction in this area, but they've never historically enforced election law. I think after this election, with a great deal of evidence that this type of law is being broken on both sides, particularly Republicans, but I believe both parties are doing it, there's going to be greater political pressure for the DOJ to step in where the FEC has completely dropped the ball.
Right, right. And, very interesting. So where is Mitch McConnell and his campaign, are they breaking election laws that are like technical and nuanced, and or are they just actually committing crimes for which people can go to jail?
Well, it's probably there's civil penalties for most of these election violations, but you know, since 2010 with the Citizens United decision, campaigns have been kind of creative. They've been toying with the different possibilities of this new wild west of campaign finance. They've been using 501c4 organizations that are not supposed to be primarily for political purposes and using them only as election vehicles. That is not supposed to be the case, but as we've seen, the IRS and the FEC has taken no action, so campaigns are getting more and more blatant about abusing this section of the tax code. On the coordination rules, again, you're seeing people who are campaign staffers who are married to the leaders of these independent expenditure groups, these super PACs and dark money groups. You're seeing candidates meet with and dine with these same organizations that are supposed to be firewalled off. I mean, candidates are getting more and more brazen about breaking the law. And again, it's not just Mitch McConnell, although he's a prime example of this phenomenon. Overall, everyone's starting to realize that there's no cop on the beat, and if without any enforcement, there's no penalty for breaking the law.
To what extent do you think that Daryl Issa's jihad against the Internal Revenue Service, Lois Lerner losing her job, you know, everybody down there getting all nervous for doing their job? I mean, this division of the IRS, their job was to decide whether a group is eligible for nonprofit status or not, and they applied it apparently both to liberals and to conservative groups. In fact, apparently they rejected more liberal groups than conservative groups. But Daryl Issa has and Fox News have turned this into such a huge issue, at least on the Republican Reich, that my guess is that the IRS is afraid to touch anything because nobody down there wants to get dragged in front of Daryl Issa's committee and bullied. Do you think that there's something to that, or am I just, you know, is this feverish paranoia here?
I don't think you're paranoid, Tom. This strategy that the Republicans have pursued on Capitol Hill over the last 2 years is kind of a stroke of political genius, because the Republican base does not like the IRS. So any investigation of the IRS gins up support within Republican activists. And there's the dual advantage that placing political pressure on the IRS, particularly their tax-exempt division that oversees these dark money groups, advantages of Republicans who have used dark money. I believe the Sunlight Foundation had a stat earlier in October showing that Republicans use dark money groups about three times as much as Democrats. So by pressuring the IRS from pushing them into a corner, it makes it harder for the IRS to enforce the rules. Really, the IRS has set out and said you can't have one of these dark money groups, these 501c4s, with a primary purpose of influencing politics. But you look at group after group after group, and they're spending almost 100% of their money on attack ads. It's hard to argue that's not a primary purpose. However, the IRS has been slow to act, and with the political pressure, it's not clear if they ever will.
Yeah, yeah. This is really I saw last night that a third of all super PAC funds have come from 42 individuals. At what point do we say, okay, we're now an oligarchy, we're no longer a democratic republic? And isn't the biggest news story of this election cycle one that no television station or network will go near because they are the recipients of this money, that this is the second election since Citizens United? The first one gave them an opportunity to figure out, you know, how to do things. Now they've got it figured out. They've got this well-oiled machine on the hard right. That really what we're seeing in races that, you know, should be slam dunks for Democrats, what we're seeing is the effect of just a tsunami of cash.
I think that's right. You look at the larger dynamic here. It's partially the fault of the media, and the media has an incentive not to press on these issues because the ad spending does benefit many of the media companies. But look, candidates aren't being pressed on the big issues facing Americans, on joblessness, on student debt, on our crumbling infrastructure. This campaign has become a circus driven by these ads. I mean, folks, candidates in some of the most competitive elections, they aren't talking about the big threats facing America. They're talking about, the one person who has Ebola in America. They're talking about the kind of fake fear that ISIS terrorists are sneaking over the border. I mean, these are contrived media spectacles. They don't really match up to what people are facing in their daily lives. And so we're seeing a political system that doesn't mirror what people are going through. And we'll see this dynamic play out next year if Republicans do take the Senate. They won't tackle any big legislative goals. They won't talk about any of these joblessness or student debt issues or any of these issues that many people, if you ask them what issues matter most to them, they won't be tackling this. They'll be attacking the EPA. They'll be trying to figure out ways to weaken financial regulations. There's going to be a big push to continue to weaken the estate tax. Those are the policies that the big donors want, and those are the policies we'll likely to see pushed by Republicans in Congress.
And the Koch brothers, being major owners of tar sands up in Canada, really want Keystone XL to be built so that they can get their oil to their own refineries down in Texas. And I'm betting that if the Republicans take the Senate, the first thing they're going to do is a big wet kiss on the mouth to the Koch brothers of presenting the Keystone XL legislation. And it's going to be tough for Obama to turn that down, I suspect.
I think that's right. The biggest, I think, policy change we'll actually see in the next 2 years is one, some type of action on Keystone XL, and two, more pressure to increase natural gas, whether that's exporting liquefied natural gas or more fracking. That's where we see the president move, right? Because that's where Republicans are going to be pressing.
Right. And then the final thing is going to be the Southern Hemisphere Asian Free Trade Agreement, sometimes known as the TPP. I prefer that acronym. It's SHAFTA. And we're going to see that, you know, I suspect. Anyhow, Lee Fong, reporter with The Nation, thenation.com. Check out his piece over there. Thank you, Lee.
Thank you, Tom. Take care.
Always great seeing you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Lee Fong is one of the best investigative reporters working in the United States, bar none. You got to read his work. Check it out at thenation.com. Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. And Steve, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network in Chicago. Hey, Steve, what's up?
I have a few really important questions, and if you don't know the answer, I really hope that you'll find out. The first one is there any way to tell 100% sure that your vote was counted?
No.
There isn't?
No. It is possible to know that they counted the fact that you showed up. Like, you know, when I went to vote this morning, the first thing I did was sign in, right? I signed in and essentially registered and demonstrated that I was me. That's the point at which the little counter gets flipped. So if I look up the database for Washington, D.C. to see who voted and who didn't, it will show that I voted. They then gave me a ballot. I filled out the ballot. I put it, you know, fed it into the optical scan machine and walked away. Whether what came out of that optical scan machine got added to any database, my actual votes, there's no way to know that. It would take a fairly exhaustive audit of the vote. And in many states, like in Georgia, for example, 100% of the votes are being done on touchscreen electronic machines that have no paper trail whatsoever. So there's absolutely no way to know if your vote actually was recorded. Next question.
I thought when you were talking with one of your guests that they mentioned that there were public lists.
Yes, the list shows whether you voted, but it doesn't show whether your vote was counted. There's a very consequential difference. If you voted, it means that you showed up and signed in and that they accepted and acknowledged your identification. But, you know, like I said, it's a two-step process. Number one, I'm here, I'm me, and they log you in and you know, the counter gets, you know, now it shows that you voted. Then they give you a ballot and you go vote on that ballot and that data may or may not be counted. In most cases, you know, the odds are 99.99999% that it will be counted, but there's no way to know for sure with these electronic machines that we've got as a result of the 2002 Help America Vote Act.
So our government has no way to ensure that people's votes are actually counted. The second question.
That's correct. There are no national standards, and most states don't have standards.
These voters that were purged.
Right.
Are they going to go to the polls and just say they can't vote? Or are they going to be given provisional ballots?
They will be given provisional ballots, which is a placebo. Provisional ballots are not counted unless you come back in person. In most states, you have to come back in person within the next X number of days. It's typically 7 to 10 days and prove that you actually were registered. Like if you can find your voter registration card that was sent to you, they bring that back and show it to them and they'll go, oh, yeah, I guess you actually are a registered voter. But otherwise, no. Provisional ballots are placebo ballots.
The ones that Greg Pallas were talking about were the ones that were purged with two different names and saying that they couldn't vote because
right.
they voted in another state.
That's right. That's right.
So I mean, are those people going to be given provisional ballots, or are
they
going to be turned away at the polls?
It'll be one or the other, depending on the state laws. Our voting, we don't have federal standards on voting in the United States. Every state does it their own way. So some states will give provisional ballots, others will simply turn you away. We had a fellow called this morning from, I think it was Texas, and he said he showed up and his name wasn't on the rolls. So, you know, they gave him a provisional ballot, and no, it was Arizona. He's calling from Phoenix. So he's gonna fight it. He's got, you know, a week or so to fight this thing. But whatever it may be, Steve, the net of the whole thing here is show up and vote. It's better than not. Thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back. Welcome back. back. Tom Hartman here with you 20 minutes past the hour. I've been telling you, if you have a problem voting, you have the right to vote. Check out Election Protection's website, 866-OUR-VOTE, OURVOTE.org is their website. It's also their phone number. And Chris Melody Fields, the co-leader of Election Protection, the group that I was just describing, is on the line with us. Hey, Chris, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So tell us, first of all, just give us a quick summary of Election Protection. What are you all doing?
Sure. Election Protection is the nation's largest nonpartisan coalition that is working throughout the entire year to protect the right to vote. We have about 150 organizations that are members of the coalition that are seeking to make sure that any eligible voter has equal access to the ballot.
Okay. So if I show up and they say, you're not registered, or we don't have your name, or, you know, you can't vote, or here's a provisional ballot, or whatever, I get any kind of problem at all, what do I do?
You call the 1-866-OUR-VOTE hotline. That's 1-866-687-8683. Already today, we've received over 9,000 calls from voters across the country that have either had, you know, questions about where their polling location is, or where, you know, if they are registered to vote, or reporting problems that they're having at the polls. You know, we've definitely had a lot of issues with machines breaking down. A lot of this morning, a lot of polling locations were not opening in on time. And, you know, one of the issues that we've been watching and tracking throughout the entire the day are the issues in Texas with the new voter ID law being implemented in preventing eligible voters from casting a ballot.
What are you finding?
You know, what we thought we would find, you know, a lot of people that have are eligible to vote, you know, either have issues or being turned away at the polls. You know, we've also had a particular issue in Georgia where, you know, early this morning we were getting dozens of calls because the Secretary of State website was down, and that is how people find their polling location and find whether they are registered to vote throughout the majority of the morning.
Why would the Secretary of State in Georgia take down their website?
No, it wasn't that they took it down. That there was an issue and it was overloaded, so we weren't being able. Voters weren't being able to get on to verify.
Why'd they put it on a crummy server?
You'll have to ask them that question. I can't answer that.
I know the answer. They you know, as Paul Weyrich said, for Republicans, our leverage in the election quite candidly goes up as the voting populace goes down. But anyway, you guys are nonpartisan, so I won't ask you to comment on that. What is your sense of how things are going across the country right now compared to previous elections?
You know, I think we are continuing to, you know, we are seeing the systematic problems that we see every election year. You know, as I mentioned before, you know, the problems with machines that are breaking down, problems with people being improperly turned away at the polls, either by poll workers being misinformed or giving wrong information, you know, places not opening on time, long lines in a number of places as well. So, you know, we're just you know, it's symptomatic of what we see every election. You know, the local jurisdictions are not properly administering their elections.
Yeah, and what can you do about it? If I'm standing in line, or I've been told, sorry, you can't vote, or here's a placebo ballot or a provisional ballot. And I call your number. Can anything be done right then and there?
Absolutely. You know, we're of course taking the information in from voters to see, you know, what are the issues are happening, but we're also going back and talking to election officials, you know, making sure if, you know, a polling place wasn't open on time, making sure that people are staying in line and working with the election officials locally, to fix those problems. If there are machines that are breaking down, working, again with the local election officials to fix those problems. So, you know, if there are calls that are reported, into the hotline, you know, we're going back out and working with local election officials or local organizations to make sure we can fix those problems.
We're talking with Chris Melody Fields, the co-leader of Election Protection. The website and the phone number are 866-OUR-VOTE.org. And Chris, this morning, Shano, our associate producer here, was loading your app into his iPhone. It was pretty impressive. Tell us about the app.
Sure. Sure. You know, we know that we're living in a digital age, and, you know, election protection is not only, you know, out there to help voters, but we want to provide them tools and resources so they can, you know, get prepared and get information about voting. So the Election Protection Smartphone app, you can text EPF to 90975, and that will allow people to access an FAQ about information in their state about the voting rules, find their polling location, and verify whether they are registered to vote. And, you know, if there are any problems, obviously, they can also report it through the app and then call the 1-866-OUR-VOTE hotline.
I had a caller earlier ask a question that I answered with maybe more confidence than I should have. I was pretty sure that I was right, but his question was, how do I know if my vote was counted? And my answer was, well, you know, voting is a two-step process. You show up and sign in and register, or, you know, say, here I am, and they approve your ID and whatever and log you in. And at that point, you will show up on the database as having voted. And then they give you the ballot or send you to the machine and you vote. But there's no way to know for sure, even though the odds are very, very high that your vote was counted, but that individual vote was actually processed appropriately and correctly by the system. Is that accurate?
I mean, it depends on the state. You know, every state has a different type of machine that that they use. So, you know, there are machines that have a paper trail that, you know, are audited after the election to verify that those ballots were cast. So it's just going to depend on the state and what type of machines they are using.
Right. But as to your individual vote, there's no way to track that and find out if your individual vote was counted or was spoiled.
I mean, you know, there are different ways. I mean, it depends on the local jurisdiction.
So it might be possible in some places.
Right.
Huh, that's interesting. Okay, I learn something every day.
Well, sure, and that's, you know, in the places where they use the machines with, you know, a paper trail, you can see, you know, instantaneously, you know, if that ballot was cast.
Right. Chris Melody Fields, the co-leader of Election Protection. 866-OUR-VOTE, OURVOTE.org is the website. The telephone number, 866-OUR-VOTE. Check it out. Chris, thanks for dropping by.
No problem.
Keep
Absolutely.
Up the great work.
Thank you. Have a
okay.
great day.
Thanks, you too. We'll be back. It's 28 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I voted this morning. Have you? Back to your calls after this. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. You know, I said years ago, back when we, you know, after the 2004 election on the air, I said with these voting machines that the day that we're going to get rid of the voting machines is the day they start going against Republicans. Right. I mean, for the last 14 years, it's been what's called redshift. Typically, when voting machines don't correctly register the vote, they don't correctly register the vote to the benefit of Republicans and to the detriment of Democrats. And that's been fairly, you know, redshift is there's been no blue shift that I know of. Well, today, a Virginia Republican congressman and the Republican Party of the state of Virginia are freaked out. Representative Scott Ringel, Republican from Virginia, he's running for re-election, as is every other member of the House of Representatives. And he just held a press conference this morning. And he said he's heard from 25 people in 19 precincts across Maryland's 2nd District, or Virginia's 2nd District, saying that we went in, we pushed the button for you, and the Democrats' name popped up. And he's quite freaked out about this. I mean, he's holding a press conference. Say the voting machines are rigged. Democrats got there. Very interesting. So we'll see. Right? The old, as my old friend and Zen master Mike Dirks used to say, we'll see. Joe in Hamilton, Ohio. Hey, Joe, you voted?
I did.
Good on you.
And here's my story. So you present them with a valid ID, and I did. And I'm talking to the pollster, and she says, I need you to sign your name, your middle initial included. And I said, okay. And she gives me this electronic pad to sign, and the purpose of this is to compare your signature from the election before as another way to, I guess, verify
right.
who you are.
Yep.
But when you go to a grocery store and you swipe your credit card and sign those things, is it like when you sign a legal document? with a pen and paper. It's not. And so this brings me back to the conversation you were just previously having. My vote could be thrown out if the signatures don't match. And so how do I know if my vote even counted? And I think that's really important to know.
Well,
to be able to research your own vote.
You will know at the very instant you sign that, because if the signatures don't match at that point, they don't give you a ballot.
She's not the one who could reject it later. I mean, you can argue. I can't cite it, but I know it's happened that in elections, people have looked at signatures. It works on petitions for when you try to get something onto a ballot. You can reject signatures. I don't know if that would apply here, but I know that the person who gave me the approval was a student, and I don't think that should be in the hands of a student.
Yeah.
Well,
these are, you know, your election volunteers, and you know, it's in many states they're volunteers. They're not paid positions, and you know, I don't know what the alternative is.
I don't know that there is an alternative, but until there is a viable alternative, I want to be able to know if my vote counted,
yeah.
If it got rejected. Why did it get rejected? And I want to be able to see it. And I don't know if that's even possible.
With electronic voting machines, by and large, that's not. But the fact that your signature was accepted means, in all probability, your vote was counted. Joe, I agree. Our election system is wildly imperfect, and I'm frankly of the opinion that rigged machines were used in the 2004, 2002, 2004, and 2006 elections to steal the vote in a lot of places. And I think, my personal opinion is that, Karl Rove's operation out of Kentucky, I think, or Tennessee, wherever it was, was involved in that. But it seems that they've backed off a little bit on this, but it's time for America to do what Ireland did. Ireland tried voting machines in one election, and then they sold them for scrap metal. They literally sold them for the metal value, not even as machines. These things are trash. They're junk computers, and they should not be in our elections. Joe, thanks for the call. Nadia in Chicago. Hey, Nadia, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to plug in a few people. Democrats who are running for office, Dennis Anderson, District 14 for Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Sheila Simon for Comptroller of the state of Illinois, Lori Novak, DuPage County, District 6, Pat Quinn for governor, Senator Durbin for Senate, and Friedrichs for treasurer. So these are all my picks, and I want everybody out there who hasn't voted, vote for them. They're good Democrats.
There you go. If you're in Chicago within the sound of Nadia's voice and WCPT, get out and wherever you are, actually, get out and vote. But there's your list for Illinois. Thank you, Nadia. Charles in Opa-locka, Florida. Hey, Charles, what's up?
Good afternoon.
Hello, Charles.
Hello?
Yes. You are on the air.
Okay, great. I have two questions for you. First is, really, morning Joe this morning. Joe comes out and speaks to Senator Clyburn and says he's tired of Democrats paying this race card, and that that Democrats are baiting minorities in the vote. When it was just an outrageous statement that I couldn't believe, because all of the things that they're doing, they're just mad that they have a black president that they can't, they refuse to call him President Obama. They're just mad that they have a black president, and they're doing everything in their power to stop him at every end. So therefore, my two questions is this. First of all, I don't know if you saw the whole hearing, but the representative Isis has, when he brought up the hearings about the Ebola, did they bring up anything about the hospital not having adequate equipment for their employees, which are the nurses, that one of the nurses, got sick, Nina Pham, through bad equipment,
right,
that the hospital was supposed to be responsible for? And secondly, my last question is this. You had a guy on there last week talking about the oil and the reason why the gas is going down. And I think what he said was, I'm not sure, but Saudi Arabia is the one that flooded the market with oil?
Yep.
My question
That's
is...
That's what I'm saying.
If,
yeah.
Well,
it's actually, there's an article about it in this morning's Financial Times. You can read it online.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but if we do come to a point where our production is making, the oil, that we're flooding the market, and we have all this oil on the market, can President Obama or any other Democratic president nationalize the oil industry.
No.
Because it's in our business, it's in our natural interest that we keep the price down.
Yeah, I think it should happen. I think that anything that's under the ground should be considered the property of we the people of the United States. And, you know, much like in Alaska, they tax basically the oil companies or for all the oil that gets extracted. They put it into a fund, and then they distribute dividend checks from that fund every year to every man, woman, and child in Alaska, the Alaska Permanent Fund. I think we should be doing that on a national basis. But it would require legislation that can't, and it would require some very, very substantial, very ferocious legislation, because that would be considered a taking. And the Fifth Amendment prohibits that specifically unless it's done for the public good and the people from whom the taking is done, you know, from whom the oil is taken, are appropriately compensated. You know, which then gets into a whole weird problem of, There's trillions, tens of trillions of dollars worth of oil under the ground, and we can only burn a few trillion dollars of it before we blow through our carbon budget. So if we were to compensate the oil companies for all the oil under the ground and then say we're not going to pump it, then we're really, you know, I mean, that's a huge bailout for the oil companies. So we're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place right now, Charles.
If we do pump it, first of all, we'd be able to control, at least try to control it. I mean, it'd be a national price. And second of all, my thing is, we're preventing the wars. I mean, we have to go and fight in all of these Middle East countries, you know, just because of war.
Yeah.
And all of the things behind it. So that's my question.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And if Iraq wasn't, you know, one of the world's largest oil producers, and you know, if they all they made was all they grew with, all they produced was cabbages, we would never have had a war in Iraq. And so, anyhow, Charles, thank you for the call. I'm with you. Adam in Phoenix, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Hey, Adam, what's up? Or is it Adam or Adon?
It's Dan.
Oh, Dan. Okay, somehow an A got in front of your name here. Hey, Dan, what's up?
I almost didn't answer. Hi, yeah. Tom, how are you?
Good.
Hey, I wanted to mention in Arizona here, I've been trying to tell you about this. This is insane. Proposition 122 on our ballot, and I'm just going to read it. It's pretty brief. A yes vote shall have the effect of allowing the state to restrict the state and all local governments from using any personnel or financial resources to enforce, administer, or cooperate with a federal action or program that is not consistent with the Constitution of the United States.
Oh, boy.
The state's authority is exercised if the state passes an initiative, referendum bill, or pursues any other legal remedy.
Wow. So
they're basically saying we're not going to do anything that the feds tell us to do.
It's nullification.
Determine it's unconstitutional.
Yeah, it's nullification. It's 60% of the way toward secession. I mean, this is Robert E. Lee.
Well, this is just ongoing proof that Arizona is Alex Petri dish.
Yeah, yeah. Or John C. Calhoun, Shano says. Yeah, I wonder if that's an Alec bill or if that's just a crackpot bill.
I guarantee you with the population that this state has, Tom, I think it's going to become law. And it'll be really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, we live in interesting times, Dan. Thanks a lot for the heads up on that.
Thank you so much. Keep up the work. I love this show.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Holly we've got 15 seconds. That's not fair to Holly. Holly, hang on. We will get to your call in a little bit. But it is election day. It's Tuesday, November 4th. Be sure to get out there and vote. I am wearing my I voted sticker, which here in Washington, D.C. also comes in Spanish. It says, yo voté. I voted. They just do that to irritate the Republicans. I'm convinced, you know, it's a democratic city. I love Washington. I thought when we moved here 4 years ago, I thought, oh, no, you know, it's a big city. I've never lived in a big city. And here we are living in downtown Washington. I love it. It's a great city. We'll be right back. 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And I got to vote for my mayor and my members of the city council and all this kind of cool stuff. You should, too. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Holly, I'm going to leave you on hold because it doesn't say here whether you're watching Free Speech TV or you're listening on one of our commercial stations. I think you're listening on a commercial station, so they're in commercial break right now. So Brian in Matthews, North Carolina, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Good afternoon, Professor. How are you?
I am well, thank you. How about
doing
you?
Well. Oh, doing well, thank you. I already voted, so I hope
okay.
I'll go through.
You avoid my wrath.
Sorry. I want to speak with you and see what you knew about this. I've been studying for the past couple of weeks about different groups and different factions who vote and you know what their issues are and so on. What I'm finding out, I have about four or five friends who are pretty comfortable, well-to-do, and, you know, married and so on. The houses, well, the men, the heads of the households are, of course, the men, but they vote one way, and women would like to vote the other. When I said would like, I've spoken to them, you know, as a group. And these women would like to vote a different way, oftentimes against their husbands, which is, but because mm-hmm. they're so traditional, so loyal, they are either afraid to vote, won't vote, or just would stay out of it altogether. They just wish the whole issue would go away, whatever it is that they dislike. What do you know about that? Because this is this growing group that I know, and these are people of means and money, but you can't really say it's a house divided because they're not even allowed to advocate their position against that. And if you could expound that a little later.
Well, what you're talking about is really a societal problem. It's not an electoral problem. It's the problem of patriarchy. And you know, my sense of it is that we're kind of coming out of a dark age right now, that young women today are far more outspoken, far more empowered, far more powerful. I really admire this young generation, the millennials who are coming up.
Typically more single, though.
Well, yeah, a lot of them are, because the economy is so bad that people are afraid to start families. There's so much uncertainty. And, you know, you can thank, you know, 34 years of Reaganomics for that one. And but I remember, you know, my mom always just kind of went along with my dad's politics. My dad was very Republican. But then, you know, when I was maybe 17, 18 years old and I started becoming a real activist, and I would come home and I would visit. I was no longer living at home. And Dad and I would get into these, you know, fairly loud and heated political arguments. And my mom started changing her politics as a result of being exposed to these arguments between Dad and me, which was pretty impressive to me. I don't know, you know, where that all went and how that all ended up, but you know, it was just that was their generation. You know, my mom was born in the late 20s. I think she was born in 29, and they're both passed on now. And that was the generation of, you know, the wife does what the husband says.
Exactly. And that's what it is. It's either a tradition thing. And I wonder how much of it, because I'm in North Carolina, good Lord, how much of it is mired in religion as well. You know, basically.
Oh, sure. I mean, Christianity teaches, you know, Paul in Romans, the woman should cover her head. She should be silent in church. She should, you know, bend to the will of her husband. But I think that, you know, that's still there and that's still out there. But I really believe it's changing. And with this younger generation, I think it's changing fairly rapidly. Brian, thank you for the call. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Holly's up next. Oh, Justin? Minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Justin Duckham is live in Kentucky, and we're going to have a report from him in just a second. But I kind of cut Holly off just before she got an opportunity to speak up before the last break. So, Holly in Northampton, Massachusetts, please keep it brief. What's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the call. I wanted to let you know I've had you on to keep my enthusiasm and my energy up, and I've been sitting here in my hometown talking to many fine folks in North Carolina, and I thought maybe some of your listeners would be interested to know this. I'm on my computer logged into moveon.org, and I got my phone, and what MoveOn does is through their computer, they ring my phone into households of people in whatever state. Right now, they've got me on North Carolina to support Kay Hagan, and it's to remind people who are already inclined to vote for Kay Hagan to be sure to go and vote because it is so important.
So you're doing get-out-the-vote telephoning from your home in Northampton through the MoveOn.org website. That is great, Holly. Good on you, and thanks for calling in and sharing that with all of us. Thank you. Justin Duckham on the line with us via Skype. Hey, Justin.
Hey, Tom. Great to be here.
Great to have you with us. So what's going on in Kentucky?
Well, it's turning out to be an interesting day to, you know, say the least. According to some of the reports that we've been getting, there has been a pretty big level of voter turnout in the more urban areas of the state. That typically has been considered to be more of a stronghold for Alison Lundgren Grimes supporters, so it looks like they are coming out pretty heavily. We were in Lexington earlier in the day, which has a lot of, you know, family background for her. Her family is pretty well represented there in terms of property ownership and owning a number of local businesses. We're currently in Louisville, which is also seeing a pretty big turnout. And as I'm sure you can imagine, like many states, there's a pretty strong divide between the, you know, rural areas, which are, of course, swinging for McConnell, particularly more so now that coal is considered to be a major portion of the ballot than the urban areas, which, you know, are skewing pretty democratically.
That's very interesting. I mean, it'd be fascinating if Mitch McConnell has to join Eric Cantor at that lobbying firm here in town where they only, I guess, what was the starting pay for Eric Cantor, $4 million?
Something like that, you know, you know, cushy little Wall Street job. I think McConnell's going to be fine no matter how it turns out, at least financially speaking. But, you know, again, that's not to give too rosy of a view. We know the polls going into this, you know, had McConnell ahead by about 10 points or so in, you know, the
Out there estimates. That's a steep hill.
Right, exactly. So if this does happen tonight, and if Alison Lundgren Grimes does pull ahead, it's quite likely going to be one of the major upsets we've seen in a in quite a long time. Yeah. And it would certainly eclipse the Eric Cantor loss that we saw.
Yeah, it definitely would. And it could be, you know, one of the things that decides who controls the Senate. That's fascinating. Any other news for us, Justin?
That's the big stuff going on. Tonight we're going to be at the, you know, watch party before Mitch McConnell, where we will either see, you know, him defeated or see his ascension to his position as majority leader, presuming that they get everybody else around. You know, yesterday was the final big push for campaigning. We saw the final election day rally held for Alison Lundgren Grimes down in Lexington, where she'll be having her watch party. And yesterday we also saw Rand Paul sort of moving up and down the state in support of Mitch McConnell to try to get the you know, last minute support out there.
I saw a couple of pictures, and I, you know, you see pictures on the internet, you just never know. But they were side by side, and one was, and they were both from political rallies in the last week, or at least they were represented as that. One was Mitch McConnell in front of a very large room full of empty chairs. There were maybe 130 mm-hmm. people in the room. And the other was Alison Lundgren Grimes in front of like 5,000 people. Is that characteristic of the kind of turnout that they are both getting?
Well, you know, I've spoken to a number of McConnell supporters around here, and one of the things that they concede is, you know, he's not very popular in the state. There's not a lot of people who have warm, fuzzy feelings over Mitch McConnell, and those who are coming out for him typically are treating this more as a, you know, sort of an anti-democratic push by them. This is their view of being a sort of a, you know, casting a vote against the president. But Alison Lundgren Grimes supporters, the ones that I've spoken to, have been, you know, overwhelmingly supportive of the candidate. They have spoken very highly of her and have, you know, pretty much portrayed this more as being, you know, something for her than purely an anti-McConnell vote.
Right. Okay. So we'll just see how it shakes out. Justin Duckham with the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Justin.
Thank you, Tom.
Great talking with you today. Maine in Chicago. Is that Maine or Wayne?
Yeah, no, that's Maine.
Maine. Hey, Maine, what's up?
All right. Professor Hartman, I have a two-part question. The one is, shouldn't the federal government guarantee all natural-born American citizens the right to vote?
Yes.
Overruling any whatever the states have, it doesn't matter, and they should have, you know, like a blanket, a federal blanket throughout from coast to coast, border to border, that all natural-born citizens have the right to vote.
I agree with
and
you.
And speaking,
it's going to take a constitutional amendment or some really serious legislation to make it happen, though.
Okay, and then part two, the young Americans that get out of jail with felonies with nonviolent crimes and different things like that, not having the right to vote, though, what does this make them if they can't vote in their country?
It makes them second-class citizens. It makes them second-class citizens, and you find these kinds of laws principally in the South, principally in states that have large African-American populations and large prison populations made up of African-Americans. And I believe that these laws, once you've paid your debt to society, you still can't vote. I think that they're a remnant of Jim Crow and segregation.
Yeah, well, this goes back to the first question then, that the federal government should guarantee that all American, natural-born American citizens should have the...
Totally agree with you. Totally agree with you, Maine. And I think that after people have served their time and paid their debt to society, their ability to vote should be restored to them. Maine, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for listening to WCPT there in Chicago. It's election day. We'll have a very different conversation tomorrow than we had today, I guarantee you. I have no idea what it's going to be, but we'll figure that out as we move along. But if you haven't voted, please get out and vote now. And if you'd like to pitch in, you can go over to movetoamend.org, and they'll hook you up where you can actually be calling voters in various states and saying, hey, can I, you know, get out there and vote, please. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at tomhartman.com.